This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. COVID has exacerbated so many of the problems that plague us, or at least made them visible in ways that we can't deny. From an economic standpoint, Michigan's businesses are closing and downsizing. And as those jobs disappear, access to basic human needs begins to dwindle. Almost everyone's affected by the pandemic's hit to our economy, but society's most vulnerable are the ones who feel it the most. And when it comes to job loss, it's women of color seeing this firsthand. What happens when they leave the job market? In the last few days, we've spoken to a few women about their experiences juggling work and family, or managing a business while holding public office, rearranging their lives because schools have closed. With us to interpret the bigger picture of women leaving the workforce is Betsy Stevenson, labor economist and professor at the Gerald Ford School of Public Policy. Betsy, welcome back to Stateside.
It's great to talk with you.
Let's talk about some of the ways in which this is hitting the women who have lost out. Some studies have told us that in the 5 or so years leading up to 2020, last year, that the historic and very stubborn pay gaps between men and women continued to decrease. That was certainly something we heard from one of the workers that we talked to. Let's listen to Claudette Pointer. She lives in Southeast Michigan, and she was laid off from her job last year as the manager at a staffing agency.
I did come into the company at, I think I was at 1075. And then, you know, gradually my pay rate started inclining. And so by the time I get to the $21 an hour, you know, life started looking so grand for me. You know, I was able to pay, you know, my bills pretty much out of one check. And so it was, I began to start living a more of a comfortable life. And then all of a sudden COVID hit. And I think I had only received, I was only at $21 for a good month and a half. And then of course my company laid a lot of the managers, pretty much all the managers. Then I had to seek unemployment. And that was like a big slap in the face because I'm like, right while I'm getting started to like become comfortable, life took a shift.
So Betsy Stevenson, is what Claudette Pointer's describing, is that consistent with what you're seeing happening to women in the workforce?
Oh, that clip is so heartbreaking, and it does really is a great example of what's going to happen to so many women. So what happens when people lose their job is, of course, they lose their current income, but they also tend to fall behind. So when they get that new job doesn't often happen at come at the same sort of pay rate that they had when they left, right? So Claudette just described this beautiful story of working her way up from just over $10 an hour to $21 an hour. And that real progress in her life was allowing her to live better. And now she's lost her job, and she describes being on unemployment. But the next part of this story is equally distressing, which is that she's not very likely to get hired back at $21 an hour. You know, she may end up finding a job, if she's lucky, at $15 or $16 an hour. So her story, her journey of loss isn't even over yet. And I think that that is what happens for so many people who lose work. And she just really illustrates it so vividly, because once you've lost work and you have to go out and find a new job, you're starting almost back from square one. And that means that you erase years of progress that you've made in terms of, you know, promotions and raises. And when I tell this story, when we talk about this, people so often focus on, you know, the highly educated woman who's in a profession where, you know, she has to maybe take time out of the labor force because of her kids, and then she comes back and she doesn't get the promotions. But you're usually, people think, I think, naturally about people at the higher end of the income distribution when they think about that loss of wage gains that come from missing out on promotions, but that applies throughout the income distribution. And I think the story you just heard is the one I've been trying to focus on, because it means that it is why COVID has not only created greater inequality in the United States, but that inequality, that increase in inequality created by COVID, is not going to go away when COVID does.
Betsy, do we know what was starting, what factors contributed to start to close that wage gap between men and women before 2020?
Well, what we've seen is a couple of things that have all been leading to closing the gender wage gap. So women have been getting more education than men along every dimension. They're more likely to go to community college. They're more likely to graduate with a college degree. They're more likely to go on and get an advanced degree. They're also doing better in college, so their grades are higher. So they're getting that sort of formal training, formal education, pursuing goals like that. And then they are working more, so they're more likely to have spent time with the same employer. When you spend time with the same employer, you tend to get raises. So that we think about that as their sort of work experience and tenure, their tenure with the same employer has been increasing, so that it's now equal to that of men, roughly. And you heard that story with Claudette, where she stayed with the same employer and she got raise after raise after raise. And at the end, she was earning twice what she'd been earning at the beginning. So it's sticking with the same employer. It's pursuing promotions. It's getting more education and training. All of those things had contributed to narrowing the gender wage gap, as well as, you know, efforts for women to enter professions that are not been traditionally thought of as female, that tend to pay more. We've seen, you know, obviously progress for women in STEM and science. But I think the stat that I really focus on is in December 2019, women held the majority of jobs in the country. They weren't more likely than men to be employed. But if you're talking about jobs where you have an employer, you bring home a paycheck, women held most of them.
Just in terms of raw numbers.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say most of them. Women held the majority of them. So they held more of them than men did. So they ticked over 50%. But it was a really important moment, because the reason they held more jobs in December 2019 than men was because what we saw in that the recovery and the economic growth between, say, 2015 and 2020 was a rise in female labor force participation, more women working. In 2019, we saw the highest share of women with young kids working that we'd ever seen in the United States before. So women with a kid under six were more likely to be at work in 2019 than they had been at any other year in our past. So we saw this just increase in female participation in employment. And of course, that also contributes to them earning higher wages. And that persisted in January of 2020 and February of 2020. And in fact, I did an interview with NPR in January 2020, which I sometimes reflect back on, because I said, I cannot imagine what would dislodge women from this point of ascendancy that they're currently at. I couldn't imagine it. And the reason was I couldn't imagine a global pandemic. All right, that I couldn't imagine we would have a global pandemic that would mean that would target in-person jobs. And I think that it really highlights where was women's, you know, how has the economy been changing and how has that impacted women? Since the beginning of the 2008 recession, so go all the way back to the end of 2007, when we, in February of 2020, we still had a million fewer jobs in that goods-producing sector. And we had added 15 million jobs in the service sector. So what's been growing over all that time period are jobs in education and health services and business and professional services. These are jobs that women hold. Women got the majority of those additional 15 million jobs that we added. But the problem was this recession targeted those jobs that women got through the growth. And that is what has dislodged them from their position as the majority of job holders.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Betsy Stevenson. She's a labor economist and professor at the Gerald Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. I want to go back to Claudette Poynter, who we just heard from a moment ago. She told Stateside that she did ultimately apply for public assistance last year to make up for lost wages. But this was, I think, not what a lot of people expect when they think about tapping unemployment benefits. Let's hear how she describes it.
I made enough money to where I didn't have to use those particular services. I don't have anything against them. So here, dealing with COVID now, none of that clicked in my head to go sign up for any of that until one of my girlfriends, she did reach out to me and she said, "Are you receiving food stamps?" Because I was calling and asking for someone to help me get food at the time. And then one of my girlfriends asked me, she said, "Are you receiving food stamps?" I said, "No, I never even thought to do it." She said, "Well, they're giving out extra because of COVID." So I right away, I jumped on there and I and this is all just recently because I just got my full food stamp benefit on last week. So I've gone through this entire pandemic with very little.
Again, that's Claudette Poynter of Southeast Michigan, one of the millions of people in Michigan who lost work due to the COVID pandemic and one of a great many women in that situation. Betsy Stevenson, like we heard, Claudette was fortunate to get some help from SNAP benefits. The things that the government has done to this point to help, do you see them as having a measurable impact on people's quality of life, according to the indicators that economists would think about?
Well, I mean, yes. So the government has reacted quite swiftly. And it, in fact, if I look at, you know, what was in the CARES Act and what they did in March, it was an incredibly impressive, quick reaction to the situation we were in, and expanding unemployment insurance to cover so many people, giving those additional payments to make up for the fact that unemployment insurance usually pays such a small fraction of people's income, usually makes up for such a small fraction of people's income. Those additional payments were necessary to try to ensure that people who had lost their work could pay their rent and put food on the table. And then increased things like food stamps, work to make sure that there were benefits available for kids who usually got benefits through, say, school lunch programs. So there was a lot of action taken. I think the real problem was then the government sort of ran out of steam, or you might think became more focused on partisan arguing on the Hill and less focused on getting something passed. And as a result, I think we didn't have enough benefits going into the fall. And, there was action taken towards the end of the year. We've got the President Biden working right now with Democrats to get additional relief passed. We're not done with COVID. We're not done with the pain of it. And we do need to be supporting families right now. And if you listen to Claudette, one of the things you realize is all the hand-wringing that happens in Washington, D.C. about how people will exploit benefits if we give them too much or we can't afford this, it's just wrong. People don't want to be on benefits if they don't have to be. What they want is to be able to eat and put food on the table. And this recession, like no other that I've ever seen, has disproportionately hit people at the bottom of the income distribution, while people at the top of the income distribution have had very little pain in terms of loss of income. And they don't have as many things to spend their money on because they can't travel, they can't go on vacation, and the restaurants are shut. So what we see is literally a savings glut at the top of the income distribution, people just hanging on to income that they don't know what to do with, while folks in the bottom half of the income distribution are out of savings. They've tapped into everything they have. And we really need to see more government support for folks that are out of savings, that have really been struggling all year. And it's got to be a concentrated effort to combat the increase in inequality that's been caused by COVID.
What happens in society when women are less present in the workforce?
I find that a kind of hard question to answer because, first of all, I'm an optimist, and I think women are going back. I think that they're going to become the majority of job holders again. I don't think that COVID will permanently change the trajectory. And I've emphasized how we're seeing growth in the service sector in the United States. That's the basis of our economy. You always have these politicians that are emphasizing, how are we going to get manufacturing jobs back? The reality is that's rounding error on our job growth. It's just a small fraction of the economy. It's much smaller. All of the goods producing sector, there are fewer employees than there are in office and administrative support in the United States.
Wow.
So our economy, right? Like, you got to put this in perspective. Our economy is a service-based economy. That means accounting services. That means entertainment services. Service is really broad. It's much bigger than what people's, mental image of somebody bringing you a cup of coffee or a meal. But women dominate that whole sector. And I don't think you can continue to have job growth. I don't think the U.S. economy can continue to expand without bringing women back. So women will come back. I think the big question is what happens to the individual women who've really been hurt by COVID. How do we make it so that we can get Claudette back to $21 an hour? I think that's where we really have to be focused, because otherwise you could go back and interview Claudette in 3 or 4 years and find out that she hasn't still fully recovered from COVID. And that's a real tragedy. And I think we shouldn't give up as in terms of public policy until we've made sure that someone like Claudette is not only back at work, but back at work really with the same kind of footing, the same kind of work responsibilities, the same kind of productivity, and the same kind of earnings.
Betsy Stevenson is a labor economist and professor at the Gerald Ford School of Public Policy at the University of Michigan. Betsy, thank you so much.
It was such a great pleasure talking with you.